Good evening, world. Welcome to WFHR's Director's Cut for this November 20th, Session 4. And we are so excited. You have your host and program director, James, here. Thank you for joining us, everybody. My partner in art, Seth, is here with us.
I am here as well, everyone. Hello.
And Seth and I are welcoming in a very special guest who happens to be one of the most talented human beings under the sun. And maybe I'm a little biased in saying that, but it doesn't mean I'm wrong. We have Bria Ann Krieger joining us, a local author, podcaster, all-around amazing creative. Bria, thank you for joining us.
Oh my gosh, I can hardly talk with such an introduction like that. Thank you, and hello, everybody.
It is a parent's job to embarrass their kids whenever they have an opportunity. So,
yes, it is. I concur.
Bria, how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing good. How are you guys?
I'm doing good over here.
We enjoy doing this show so much, so we are thrilled.
Yeah.
We are thrilled to be on the air, especially with you. So, yeah, this could be fun.
I want to pick Bria's brain about being an author and starting out and how people can get into that industry. And certainly if we have time, touching on the podcast world as well. Otherwise, we'll bring her back and just talk podcasts sometime. But I wanted to start with an icebreaker. And it's a topic that I was looking forward to hearing both of your takes on. So recently, an article came out. The headline is, "The director of Will Smith's new movie hopes audiences can get past the infamous Oscar slap and see the movie and take it in." And it immediately got my brain to go down this rabbit hole of the way we are nowadays with entertainment. Even back when we were kids, Seth, this was going on. And even before that, you had this dueling thing in our brains of, okay, I want to see this movie, I want to see this show, or I want to listen to this music, but the person that made it, I don't know how I feel about that.
Oh, yeah.
That dealing with that and kind of the balance of that. Now, this has existed throughout entertainment history, and I think you can go into even recent history, look at a character like Marlon Brando. Nobody's going to question Marlon Brando's talent. Marlon Brando was a game changer. His acting style innovated acting. It put things on a different course to where even I, as an actor, learned, studied much of his work. Mm-hmm. And anybody that has ever worked with Marlon Brando will tell you, he was difficult. He was an egomaniac, narcissist, a lot of those things. There's almost no movie that he's attached to that doesn't have a horror story behind the scenes attached to
right.
it. And that's just on the background. That stuff wasn't even that common knowledge back then. It is now. But one thing that was common knowledge was he was a difficult eccentric. The award ceremony, the Oscars, he sends somebody there to accept his Oscar award, many things like that. But it didn't ever hurt his box office numbers.
No,
it didn't hurt him getting work. Now, with things like the Will Smith situation, the cancel kind of culture that goes on, and a lot of these different things, it's becoming more and more common to see a big name one day, gone the next.
Right.
How we go about balancing this? And it's an individual thing. I don't think this is a societal thing, but how we all do this and find we all have our line in the sand. So my question to you guys is, going forward, let's take this movie, for example, this Will Smith movie that's coming out. Are we asking too much of people to be able to go into this movie not thinking about that? Or should that just be a given that, hey, why would you include that? He's playing a character. He's not being Will Smith. Mm-hmm. He's playing a role. Like, how we walk this line as a society.
I think that it's human nature to have that in mind when you're going in, but it's the actor's job to remove that from the viewer's mind. So I don't think that you necessarily have to, like, actively not think of that going into the movie if you want to go to the movie at all. But if it's a good movie and it did its job, you won't even be thinking of that while you're watching it.
Very well put.
That's a good point. Yeah. I know James and I have talked about this in the past. Sometimes on the air, but more just, you know, chatting about stuff where I go back to what James says about the choice is up to you. How do you feel about this? Because I know to our great sadness, James and my very great sadness, we both love the movie L.A. Confidential.
Yeah.
But it's very hard to watch that now because of Kevin Spacey. and everything we know now about him and everything that happened. And unfortunately, it has, for me, and for, I think I can speak for you on this one, James, it's tainted the movie, unfortunately, because I love that movie. It's such a great film, but now we have to deal with a very monstrous person on that thing, and it's like, it does, it makes me uncomfortable to watch the movie.
I'm a huge fan of that one, The Usual Suspects. Love that movie, and I'm glad you actually brought this up. I didn't even think of Kevin Spacey, but he's probably my best example of where it got difficult for me. On two levels. One, because I looked up to Kevin Spacey. I have no problem admitting that. I studied his acting. I thought he was an incredible performer. Down to his feet, to his top of his head, he was such a good actor at completely turning into a character and enjoying that. Then you hear the things that have come out about him, and he's gone to court for, and some of the things that he has pled guilty to in that, where they are not only, I mean, sexual abuse is wrong on any level, but especially when it involves a young person.
Yes.
And that certainly affected me as somebody who was abused at a young age. So I'm a little sensitive to that subject, and then it's a person who I looked up to. And I tried for a couple of years now to go back and watch scenes, not even movies, but just scenes from a movie when he's not even in the scene. Baby Driver, one of the more recent examples of, I thought, a good movie, a fun movie. But
very fun.
Yeah, you liked it too, Brie?
Yeah, that was actually when you guys were naming Kevin Spacey movies, I was going to name Baby Driver because it was so well done, and it's just a shame that, you know, it's kind of tainted now.
And I don't know how common it is where we're coming from on this as entertainers, and where we're not able to really take these movies in. I wonder if it's more common for people just not even caring. And just, you know, they just watch, it's just a movie. I'm just going to watch the movie. It doesn't mean I'm supporting that person. Right. I'm just watching the movie. I don't know what the more common feeling is. I just know that it's not as if we're going to get to a point where everybody's going to shut down and we're not going to share our personal lives anymore. We're not going to have paparazzi people digging into people's lives and everything like that. I'm curious to see how this grows, how this develops as a society, and how, as on an individual basis, we handle this.
Yeah, and for me, I mean, Kevin Spacey was a great example for me personally because he was so big in my childhood. Bill Cosby was the big one for me. I remember listening to the records. My dad had almost all the comedy records, loving those, laughing at those, and that's the one thing I have real trouble with now because, unfortunately, we found out he's a monster, and I can't not hear that when I'm listening to his comedy now,
right?
Unfortunately, because it played such a big part. Now, I'll survive without ever listening to his comedy again.
Yeah.
I'll be fine, you know?
Yeah.
So it's not that big of a deal. But I think it really boils down to how you feel personally about it. And we also have, we should touch on the fact that there's differences between what kind of contact, what kind of behavior happened. There are big differences between sexually assaulting someone and doing a crude joke. They're both wrong.
Yes.
But there are different levels of what this means.
Yeah. Because the other part of this, too, that I think of when I think is the opportunity to grow as a human being. And there's certain things that, no, you lose your right to make movies, to make music because you did this one thing. And you don't get to come back from certain things. Mm-hmm. You know, Harvey Weinstein, a great example. Bill Cosby, another great example.
Yep.
No, I'm sorry. I don't care how funny you are. You're done. It's not a birthright that you get to produce comedy albums.
Right.
But there's also the side of things of you have people that tweet something or say something wrong or what have you, and then they get kind of blackballed. And I don't want to – I worry about us becoming a society that doesn't give people an opportunity to learn from their mistakes and grow. That's a part of human life. Everybody experiences.
Exactly.
Yeah, I completely agree.
So it's just interesting, you know. I don't think we're going to be able to solve it, the three of us, but I do think it's an interesting topic, and I appreciate both of you kind of jumping in on that one. I didn't tell either of them we were going to do this, but, so I appreciate you guys playing along.
That's what this show is all about, I got to say.
So let's get to our guest today, Bria Ann Krieger, local author, podcaster. And as a podcaster, Bria has a great podcast called The Hi-Ho Pistachio. She does a great job with this one. You can catch it wherever you get podcasts. Go ahead and take a look at it and listen. One of the things she does that I found really fun is that she usually, you start every episode with a unique question, right, Bri?
Yeah, something silly just to kind of shake out the nerves and get on a similar, like, playing field, because the word podcast has kind of a almost intimidating feeling towards it. Like, it's very serious, and I just want it to be a fun and natural conversation.
I think it's a really cool idea. And like any good parent, I'm going to steal that idea. And no, I'm joking. No, but I do like when you join us. I do like to spin the tables on you a little bit and ask you a silly, fun question. So that's where we're going to start.
All right.
Bria, if you could have coffee with any historical figure, who and why? And it has to be somebody in history, somebody who's no longer with us.
Oh, my gosh. Like a historical figure or someone famous?
Of all the people in the world.
Yeah, yeah. Any of the above.
Wow, that's a really great question. Mm. And a cup of coffee, I can drag that out for hours.
Right, yes. Yes.
Let's see. Honestly, I think that there's so many people that it would be amazing to, but I'm thinking about who could I get the most out of, like, have a lifetime experience having this cup of coffee with them. Mm-hmm. And the first person that came to mind was genuinely Robin Williams. I would really love to have a cup of coffee with him.
Oh, that'd be cool.
That is pretty funny considering we both have the same answer. That's kind of funny, Bree. Check.
Oh my gosh.
There's another check right there. That's it.
Of course we do.
They did not rehearse this, ladies and gentlemen. This was new. This was out of the blue, just so you
that's
know.
Hilarious. That's
hilarious. Did not plan this.
Thank you for that, Bria. Thank you for playing along. Seth, do you have an answer? Do you have somebody you think of?
Literally, this changes daily for me.
Yeah.
It does. And today, I think just because I've been listening to some stuff about music, about the history of music. Mm. Today, I believe I would want to have a cup of coffee with Hector Berlioz.
Wow.
The French composer.
Yeah.
Back in the 1800s. Mm. Because not only was he a marvelous composer, his most famous work is the Symphonie Fantastique. Mm. It kind of changed the course of music in a lot of ways in Europe anyway. Mm. In program music, what is called program or concert music. But not only because he was a great composer, but he was a great personality. Hmm. He had this, he would write, there's collections of his essays and letters and stuff. He was a wonderful writer, and he was very funny. He was over the top with his own, you know, he's like, I remembered my own birth kind of thing. You know, one of these guys, he kind of exaggerated things.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was, I mean, but he was so funny about it, very tongue-in-cheek, you know, mm-hmm. very self-deprecating at the same time. Just a wit and a marvelous person. I would just love to talk to him. Just to see his energy and everything, it would be really cool.
That's a fantastic answer.
Ask me tomorrow, it'd be someone different.
So I didn't want to cut you off, Bree, if you were going to say something. Sorry.
I didn't really even know about that individual, so it was really cool to get that little peek into music history. Thank you, Seth.
Hey, no problem.
I got to look into that. I'm not that familiar with him either. I've heard the name, but yeah.
He was very distinctive looking, too. I don't know if he hit 5 feet tall. and he had the most massive mane of hair on his head that, like, stuck out for... I mean, if you see drawings, because there was no pictures, of course, if you see, like, portraits of him, he's a very interesting looking individual as well.
Yeah, I have a soft spot for people like that with funky
very
hair.
Eccentric.
Eccentric and funky hair. It's right up my alley. It's kind of my wheelhouse.
That's right.
Bria, part of the reason we brought you on today is because you are a local author, and saw recently that you had a memory that you you're sharing that you when you got your first book in the mail, your fourth book being published, and you got it in the mail, and you had a great little picture with it and everything. You've been doing this a while. You've got 8 published books, I believe, and working on a third story this year. Is that correct?
Yeah, that is correct. Sorry. Sometimes I got to catch up with myself and remember all the things that have happened. But yep, that's correct.
That really speaks to that not only how busy you get with this work, mm-hmm. but that's an author right there. That's such a writer answer. That's great. So I want to talk to you a little bit about writing, the process of it that you go through. Certainly, your publishing and how you have gotten published in that. And we know that we've got a lot of great authors in this area, in Wisconsin in general, let alone a lot of authors that we haven't heard from yet that are probably looking to get published, looking to get self-published or any of those things. So I want to talk to you about some of that. But first, let's get to the writing part of things. And so my first question for you, Bree, when was the moment you felt... You know what? I'm a writer. this is it. I'm a writer. This is something I want to do. This is something I can do. This is something that I want to dig my hands in the dirt in. Was there a moment when you felt, yeah, this is what I want to do. This is something I want to do.
Oh, wow. I honestly don't know if I've been asked that question before, and it's very thought-provoking. So thank you for asking it. And yes, I think I do have a memory that comes to mind. I first started writing, when I first started writing, I was writing poetry, and I was 12 years old, and we had an English course towards the end of the year that was the poetry unit, and I had never really heard of poetry or knew what it was about, but I kind of had a knack for writing it, and I liked finding words that would rhyme with each other. And I had bought a little notebook from like a church garage sale or something for 50 cents, and I wrote my first poem in there, and then I just kept writing poems in there, and I shared one with my family, and after I shared it, I saw the look on their face, and then I thought, oh wow, I've never seen that reaction before. I want to do that again. So I just kept writing, and people would tell me they could see it in their head, and they loved the picture that was painted in their head while I'm reading the words that I wrote. And I don't know, I just kind of fell in love with that.
That's awesome. That's a really cool story. Thank you for sharing that. I was telling Seth earlier about this. Should we go? Yeah, go right ahead.
Okay. We're coming up our first break here, everybody. Yeah. So when we come back here, we will continue with Bree, and we're going to do more about her podcasting and her writing, of course. We'll go into the process of writing. Every writer has a different process, right? I'm dying to know what her process is. So stay tuned, everyone. We're going to take this quick break, and we'll be back in a few minutes on Director's Cut.
Welcome back, everybody, to WFHR's Director's Cut. Thank you so much for joining us. Seth and James here with you, and we've got Bria Ann Krieger joining us right now. And Bria, local author, local podcaster, talking a little bit about those worlds. And Bria, as a writer, I'm curious to know, everybody has their own style and their own way of doing things. For you, how does writing happen?
Oh, wow. That is quite the question. I guess it starts with an idea, and usually the ideas kind of just come to you. I get really inspired by things that are around me, or taking in certain music and looking at certain pictures. But yeah, I guess like the writing process, like you said, it's different for everybody. For me, I like to be kind of in a not completely quiet area, but somewhat quiet, and got to have a cup of coffee and usually my laptop or a nice worn-in notebook.
Interesting. Would you say that it's not uncommon to have multiple projects going on at once?
Oh, no. I think if you talk to any writer, they have too many projects going on at once.
Part of the reason me asking some of these is because I'm generally curious and want to know, but also part of the purpose of having you on is I want to encourage others to get into writing, to pursue writing if they want to, and pursue the publishing aspect of things. I genuinely think that writing is one of those formats that everybody should get involved in, whether you're a published author or not, whether you show anybody your work or not. It just can be such a healing and therapeutic process, let alone fun to do. We all have ideas. We all have creativity.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. And there are so many good writers out there. And I think that the world of traditional publishing has scared some future authors away, but self-publishing has opened so many doors for so many authors, including myself. And I really think it's the future of publishing.
Well said. The other thing I wanted to ask about, because you mentioned how earlier in the conversation, how you feel you came across to, okay, I want to be a writer. This is what I want to do. I was talking with Seth earlier today about the moment that I thought had that happened for me. I was about 11, 12 years old. I told my mom I want to be a writer, and she gave me her old typewriter. And I remember sitting in the living room working on something and her looking over my shoulder and kind of telling me, punctuation and things, and her walking away. And it was how matter of fact she was with me that I realized, okay, this is not only something I want to do, I can do. Mm-hmm. And I think that was a big part of it for me. It wasn't just that I wanted to do it, but having somebody in my life that made me feel like I could do it. And then some years later, I'm in high school, and we have this short story. We're in a writing class that we're taught. We write a short story and base it off of another short story, but put your own spin on it. Mm-hmm. And actually, Bria has the short story. I came across it a couple weeks ago, and I just gave it to her to look at.
That's great.
But in that moment, I write that story, and my teacher, Mr. Dresser, said that day, I want you guys to go up there and read these. Mm. And then he had me, the first one up there, to first do this. And you guys know what high school's like. I mean, we beat ourselves up. You're worried about all your all these different things. And I had told anybody that would listen since sixth grade that I want to be an actor. So part of the reason he had me go first was he believed, oh, he'll be fine. I was a nervous wreck, and I'd never read anything like that out loud, let alone my own work. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't very confident as a writer at all. I'm not very confident today, let alone back then. And I remember sitting up in front of the whole class and reading this story, and I didn't look up once. I was afraid to look up and see people, you know, messing around, talking, not paying attention, you know, whatever the case, or maybe even worse, them actually paying attention. I don't know. I don't remember.
Worse, yeah.
I remember stopping the last sentence and then looking up, and everybody was looking at me and everybody was paying attention, every kid in that class, and it blew me away. I did not expect that, and I don't know what it was about that moment, but that was the moment for me that I'm like, not only can I do this and I want to do this, but I think I might have a future at this. I think I might be okay. It might be all right. Never thought I would be like a Stephen King or somebody like that, but I thought, oh, I can. This is something for me. And Bria's story, mine, there's so many other examples out there of that. Mm-hmm. So again, encouraging others to pick up the pen, to write. Your story is probably very similar to these.
Absolutely. Thank you for sharing that. That was really fun to hear that experience of yours. And something that I live by and I try to say as often as I can to other writers is that there's always room on the world's shelves for more books, and there should always be more stories because there's an audience for every type of story out there.
Oh, she's good.
I love that. There's always room on the shelves for the stories out there. I got a question about the nuts and bolts of your writing yourself. Do you write every day? Do you have a set time that you set? Oh, I'm going to write for like 2 hours, 3 hours, whatever it is.
I really wish that I could answer that question with that I have a set time every day, because that sounds so responsible and healthy. But unfortunately, I have a very chaotic schedule. But I do try to write every day. My office hours, as I like to call them, are during the nighttime when I can't sleep. So I usually end up writing around nighttime, or if I find some time during the day in between things. But I found it very helpful that when I can't sleep, I have like the most creative juices going on.
Mm. That sounds about right. That does sound
about
right.
Yeah.
Do you have to balance another? I mean, do you have other work besides this that you're trying to do both two things at the same time?
I'm a freelance writer.
Oh, so okay.
My day job is still writing, but it's more on the article blog content side.
Gotcha.
But I still get to flex my like creative bone, but it's not, you know, writing stories.
Mm. No, it is very different. But you are a professional writer. In other words, that is how you make your living. But this is the books and stuff. That's more of the passion side of it.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Mm. Okay. Mm.
You know, I'm curious, Bria, one of the things that every author gets faced at some point in their career, if you will, is the style, the way to write. Do you think writers should write books according to what readers want or according to what their passions are about? Or maybe a better way to put this, do you think people should write what they know or take chances and write about subjects and things that maybe they don't know much about, but they're learning in the process as they're writing the book?
That's a good question. I think on one side, as far as when you said should writers write a story for the readers, I think that if you write for yourself and you write a story that you sincerely enjoy, that will translate to the reader, and that those are probably the stories that readers like the most because they feel like they're connecting with it. And as far as your other question about writing about something kind of new. I think if you do your research and you're sensitive to the topics you're writing about, I guess it's situational, I'd say go for it. But be cautious of what you're writing about as to not ruffle feathers or disturb like a possible reader, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's a good answer. When it comes to support, you know, you and I both mentioned stories that started with support, our writing careers, our, you know, that kind of thing, whether it was a family support or strangers or friends or what have you. How important is it to just writers in general, young, old, anybody who's been writing for years or they just picked up a pen, to have a support system?
Oh, I think it's one of like the keystones of the writing career is to have that community, even if it's just one person having a writing buddy. It really changes the whole writing game. I was having a bit of a slump, and a friend of mine who is also an author, that I love her books, her name is Monroe Wildrose, I reached out to her and I asked her if she would ever consider having a writing buddy, and she said, I've been waiting for you to ask me that. Yes, I would love to. So we send each other's work in progress chapters, and we make comments, and it just really encourages you to keep going. And yes, this is a good story.
Very cool.
Nice.
And good to hear that you have that. I couldn't agree more. I think that's, you're hard pressed to find anybody who has made it very far in any industry, let alone entertainment, without a good support system.
Oh yeah, I completely agree.
Do you think it's a good idea to, one of the things that I noticed as an actor, if I'm playing George Bailey, I don't want to watch, the movie It's a Wonderful Life. I don't want to see Jimmy Stewart's performance. For one, I can't match that, and I feel like you're just kind of copying somebody else's work.
Or a parody of it.
Yeah. So you want to put your own spin on it, so, you know, you don't watch that movie, that kind of thing. Do you think that with writing, it's healthy, it's good for writers to read other works, even when you're working on a project yourself?
Oh, yeah. That's actually a really good comparison, because on the acting side, I totally see what you mean, and I agree with that. And then on the writing side, I believe that it was Stephen King who said, when you can't write, read, and yes, reading makes you a better writer. And I couldn't agree more, especially if you were in a writer's block, reading a book that is kind of within your genre that you enjoy writing in can really energize you and fill you with inspiration. And not so much that, I don't think you should have a fear that you're going to copy that book that you're reading, because I don't think that's necessarily true, at least not in my case. But I truly think it energizes you and it motivates you to keep writing.
When you first started writing, was it an early passion to be published, or was that something you didn't think about until later?
That's a good question. I don't think that I really thought about publishing my work until I had entered this writing contest, and it got published in a collection of poetry, and that memory you brought up when we first started talking was one of those contests of my poem getting published in a book. And it wasn't until then that I thought, maybe I could make my own collection of poetry and I could publish my own book. And I published my first poetry book when I was 18, I believe.
Wow. That's impressive. Just impressive. When it came to that point, that stage, and you want to get published, where do you go as a writer? How did that start?
At the time, I didn't have an established writing community, and this was back in like 2014, so it was almost, I hate to say it, but self-publishing was almost gatekeeped in a way. It was hard to find information and like reliable information at that, but it was a lot of self-taught work, and that's something I kind of thrive on. I enjoy doing research, and YouTube is also your best friend. But now, I think if you want to get into the self-publishing world, there are so many different writing communities you can go into that people are willing to tell you and share with you what their experiences are and what steps you can take to get there.
Is there any places that you would recommend or anything as far as websites or things for people to look into to kind of start picking up on that or get the ball rolling for them, I should say?
Yeah, absolutely. This is going to sound a little silly, but some of like the most pure and wholesome and wonderful writing community friends I've made has actually been on TikTok. And it's called hashtag book talk. I feel so silly like saying these words because they don't sound real. But I've made just like the best writing friends and community through that app.
Who knew? It's the thing, though. You could tell that they had no idea what TikTok would be because there's no way they would give it a silly name like that if they knew that people... Yes, actually, I was referring to something on TikTok. And there's just no way to say it. It brings some like a status to it or something.
Hey, man, I remember when Twitter came out, the same discussion was being had.
Good point. Yes. Bree, would you say if I'm a young author and I'm listening, or I'm just an author, I should stop saying young. If I'm a person out there that wants to be a published author, would you say that self-publishing was a difficult process?
I think that it comes with its own set of challenges, like any creative adventure you're going to embark on. It is a lot of work because you are, unless you hire somebody to edit your work for you. You are the writer, the editor, the marketer. It's a lot of work, but I don't want that to scare people into going into it because for me, it only made me fall in love with my work and the journey even more because of all of the hard work that I poured into it.
That's good to hear.
That's got to be difficult being your own editor because you have to look at things in a different way, and I suppose it's just like anything else. You have to sometimes sacrifice, you know, the parts you like the most because it doesn't work for the story or something like that. But I'm guessing it also gives you a new perspective on your own writing as well.
Oh yeah, that is a great way to word it, Seth. I totally agree. I've had those times where I'm clinging on to a sentence because I love the way it sounds, but I gotta let it go.
Yeah.
Is there any advice you might be able to give people that want to get the ball rolling when it comes to publishing?
I wish that I could remember who said this, but it's a famous quote that you can't edit a blank page, or if there's a story out there you want to read and it's not there, you should write it. And I think if you have an idea, whether you think it's already been done or no one's going to like it, it's your idea, and you should put it out there because you never know. It could end up being somebody's favorite book. So I think just starting is enough, and it's the only way to get the ball rolling.
They love to say everybody has a story to tell, and I genuinely believe that's true. I also think that everybody has a unique story to tell. Everybody has their own perspective of a story. So I couldn't agree with what you said more. I think that was well said. It's one of those things where, you know, you don't know until you jump sometimes.
Right. I do want to have one quick question here before we wrap up the segment. We'll take a quick break and then come back. How has the response been you've said you've published several books now. And not necessarily that you're selling, you know, like they're selling like hotcakes or anything. Yeah. But what's some of the stuff you've heard from people who have read it and what's been some of the feedback?
Well, thank you for asking that. I've been so lucky to get so many positive responses from my novel, I've Never Danced, which was released around last year. Just people who have said that they laughed and they cried and they just fell in love with the characters. And someone even told me that it helped them in their own grieving process, which they didn't think was going to be possible, and that they had never read a book where it explained grieving so well. And that really hit me because I was not expecting that. And it was just really incredible to see the power of words and a story that meant so much to me, letting it out in the world and it becoming someone else's.
Well, boy, isn't that why we create art? Boy, I tell you. Wonderful story.
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we do have to take a quick break here, everybody. We will come back here in just a couple of minutes to wrap up our last segment of our Director's Cut.
Welcome back one more time, everybody, to this episode of Director's Cut. Thank you so much for listening. Best listeners in radio. Appreciate all you guys joining us. Be sure to stick around because we got some good stuff to wrap up our conversation with Bria Ann Krieger here. Seth and I talking with Bria. And as we were talking about you as a writer, Bria, I just kind of wanted to wrap that subject up with how people can take in your work.
Yes, thank you so much for asking. Well, my pen name is B.A. McCrae, and my books are on Barnes & Noble online, and you can also find them on Amazon.
Encourage you to do that. Not only an excellent writer, but really an insightful one. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy your work, and I know it might sound a little biased. Doesn't mean I'm wrong. You know, it's really insightful, very cool work that you're doing, and not fair that you're already lapping me as a writer when I've been doing this twice as long as you've been alive. It's not fair. It's not fair.
Well, I can be your writing buddy now, and I'll encourage you to get some books in there.
I'm looking forward to that process with you. I generally am. Bria is not joining us just as an author today, though. She is a podcaster, a successful one. She's had a show that she's been doing for a while now called Hi Ho Pistachio. Bria, is that the only podcast you do?
Briefly, I was also doing a podcast called The Optimistic Author. I kind of put a break on that just because of, life gets crazy and with writing more books. But that podcast, I interviewed authors and talked to them about their writing process, and then I also shared tips about writing and publishing. And I recently started a podcast called Shoebox Poetry, and it is where each episode is a poem of mine that I read, and it's just kind of a peaceful thing to have in the background, if that's your thing.
Oh, I like that.
Very nice.
Yeah, that's very cool. It's a really cool idea. When it comes to this world, podcasting, the joke is that everybody's got a podcast now, and there's a million of them out there, and there is a little truth to that. There's a lot of them out there, but I think that this is one field where that's a good thing. There's so many different subjects, and these podcasts tend to focus on certain subjects. Mm-hmm. Well, there's so many different things. Why not have a different podcast for every little thing and all that? I see there's room for everybody in this world, in this universe. So I think that it's one of the ones where I really want to encourage people, writing, podcasting. These are fun, creative things you can do. And if you're going into it to just have some fun and not necessarily looking for a way to make a buck or anything, I think it could be a really enjoyable creative process for people. So, Bria, what gave you the inspiration to want to do a podcast?
I came up with the idea for Hi Ho Pistachio in March. I believe it was March of 2020, so we were in the pandemic, and I just started to get this feeling that people around me, like my friends, or even people I didn't know, were losing sight and spark for their passions, and that just kind of made me sad. So I thought, if I had people on to talk about their passions, that might ignite a spark in them. And I love talking to people about things that they love talking about because it just lights, you can see them light up. So that is how I came up with the idea for Hi Ho Pistachio, a podcast for the dreamers.
Mm-hmm. I was just going to ask you, it sounds like you have a very broad theme for your podcast. It's just you bring people on and then you talk to them about what they like to talk about, which that's very cool. I think that's a wonderful idea.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much. It is definitely centered around what that guest's passion is and then kind of diving into it. So, for example, I've had I play Dungeons & Dragons because I'm super cool, and we had our Dungeon Master on for an episode because I was just fascinated with how he sets up the game, how he got into it, what kind of... He's spinning so many plates while we're playing this game.
Oh, yes.
And it's fascinating, and you get to learn so much about the person and the passion, and then also people listening, if they get inspired by it, that is just another cherry on top.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
I know Seth knows a little bit about that world.
So I do. I do know a little bit about that. It's true.
And I'm going to learn.
What?
Between the two of you, you guys are going to learn me on the whole D&D
thing. Oh, you'll
like
stuff.
I'm looking forward to that.
It's so fun.
Yeah.
You mentioned something in that answer, Bria, that kind of just piggybacks right into my next question. You we've talked about you as a writer and the, you know, your process with some of that. We're talking about the podcasting right now. Bria also is a registered, you ordain weddings as well. Am I wording that right?
Yeah, you are.
Okay, so there's that she does. She's, you know, she's also got a personal life and everything. So she's got all, you have all these plates spinning. When it comes to being the new world of creatives, where you can legitimately make a living, you know, doing this, being just creative, doing different things, and having all this, you don't have to necessarily clock in and out of work. And that there's a lot of freedom and a lot of beauty to it. But one of the things that I think a lot of people don't realize they need in life is some structure. We're kind of, our brains are designed that way. Our brains like structure. They like routine. So without the normal structure of work of 8 to 5, you know, or whatever, and clocking in and out, it can be a little bit more difficult to be diligent or to get the task done, to get to work, or to motivate yourself to work. How do you find ways to do that, Bria?
I agree with you that it's very important as humans to have our routines and to have goals, because if we didn't have them, we would find ourselves on the couch very often. So something that helps me is having a to-do list. And I will say that I have a lot of self-control and self-discipline, so that plays into it. But my to-do list, I would be lost without it. I make one every day, so it kind of keeps me on track, and it's also very satisfying to make those little check marks and to cross that thing off.
That's awesome. You know, that last part you mentioned there, I wouldn't have thought of that. I'm a list guy too, check mark. When it comes to that, I do that because my brain is so chaotic, and it helps me keep things in order and all that, and keep me in check, keep me in line, no pun intended, keeps me in line to do these things. But I never thought about how good I feel when I check things off, because I do. I feel good when I do it, but I hadn't really taken the moment to appreciate that. And you know, one of the things that we talk a lot about here at this station is taking the wins, no matter how big or small they are. A win's a win, and we don't get enough of them in life. Right there is a little moment where, hey, there's a win, every check mark, and it's something you can feel good from. Another good reason to keep lists.
Yeah, totally. And another thing that I do, I make the checklist in my planner, and next to my planner, there's also like a few lines where you can write other things you have to do that day. But I actually use that space to write a message to myself about how I'm feeling during that day. So if I woke up and it's kind of like not a very good day, I'll write to myself, like, I know that today isn't like grooving along like we thought, but you're doing good and you have this to look forward to, and let's just keep going. Just kind of a note of motivation.
Well said. When it comes to the nuts and bolts, the mechanics of recording a podcast, of getting it online, editing, all those things, is that a world that you knew about, or is that more audiodidact, more you've taught, self-taught?
That was more of the teacher of YouTube, for sure. A lot of self-taught there. But it's not impossible. Like, there were a lot of things that I didn't know in trial and error, but it's all possible. It's out there for you to learn.
It's important, I think, when you're getting into a new world, whatever it is, to kind of like make it smaller. To you know, everything seems so big when you're first walking into a subject. And if you can just, you know, make it smaller or maybe more personable, or just break it down. I will always think of the squirrel at winter. The squirrel gathering, how does that little squirrel have enough food for the whole winter? Well, he just grabs one nut at a time. He just, you know, that, and he brings it back, and then he comes and gets another one. Like, you break things down that small, you can accomplish anything.
That's a great analogy. I really like that.
When it comes to, and then this is a question that I kind of know a little bit of the answer to, because you and I have discussed this a little already, but I do think it's really good for listeners out there, especially, again, that are just getting going in this industry, but also if they've been doing it for years, even longer than you and I or something. How do you, what do you do to market your books, to market your podcasts, and what could you recommend when it comes to that?
to be honest, I am still learning how to market myself, especially being a bit modest, if I might say so myself. It's hard to self-promote, but something that I think is the trick to self-marketing is being yourself and just being very open and authentic. People like authenticity because they don't want to feel like they are connecting with something that is fake. So I believe that showing your true self and genuinely connecting with people who comment on your post or leave a review, I think that is the key to good marketing.
Well said. You know, one thing, just adding on that and really kind of also talking about this subject in general, when it comes to publishing yourself or the, looking at, you know, you got to believe in yourself before anybody else is going to believe in you. My first agent told me this, and I had to work really hard at my confidence and building that up, because how can I expect them to work for me if I'm not even believing it? And it took a lot of work, but it's something that I'm really proud to be able to say I got better at. And that's really saying something, because anybody that knows me knows I'm not a very confident person. But when it comes to that world, I learned I'm a completely different animal when it comes to acting. You ask me if I'm good at this or good at that, and I'm probably going to give you a 20-word answer of why I am, and I might think I'm not. You ask me about acting, I'm one of the greatest under the sun. I have no problem. I can say that without a shadow of a doubt. Now, I'm not sure how you can prove that necessarily, but what I stem from is the confidence you need to do this job, to do so many of these things. And part of what we like to do around here is something that's becoming more and more common, real radio. We're not talking very much like this and being very stuffy and insert laugh at joke and laugh tracks and these things. People don't want that. As Bria was just saying, people like real, and that's where we're going more and more with our entertainment, podcasting, writing, any of these things. They want authentic, they want real, and they want vulnerable. And so my question, do you find a being vulnerable is obviously can be difficult and challenging, but do you find a reward in that as well?
I do. I think that that is where the greatest connection comes from, when you're being vulnerable, because people see it as a door for them to also be vulnerable, or to thank you for being vulnerable when you didn't even know that deep down you kind of needed those words. Mm. So for someone to thank you for being vulnerable. And I've made really great friendships from taking that chance and being vulnerable.
I appreciate that answer. There's so many people out there that are really good at that, and then there's so many like our generation, Seth, that I think are learning to do that, are learning ways to and stuff.
We were certainly not raised like that.
Right.
That was not kind of the way we, in general, I mean, there were certainly members of our generation that were, but as a group, I think we're still learning. I think you had a good point there. We have time for one more question, and James, I'm sorry, I'm going to take it.
Please do.
I'm going to take the last question.
Go for it.
Is there anything that you're working on right now that you can get, without spoiling anything, that you're working on at the moment that you'd like to tease a little bit about what kind of a story it is or something like that? I'd love to know.
That's such a better question than what I had. That's so better.
Thank you for asking, Seth. Well, I just finished editing and revising everything for the sequel to my novel, so that should be debuted early 2023, I want to say. But I've recently started writing a story that is, I'm not going to say what the trope is, but it's one that people have seen before, and it's a twist on a Christmas story. Or not a Christmas story, but it's a Christmas story.
I think we get it. Yeah, it's a Christmas story. Oh, perfect time of year for that, right?
And it is such an awesome idea. It is such a wonderful concept. I really like it.
I do have one more thing really quick, because I do want to let people know that, and again, because she's more modest than anything, she probably wouldn't bring this up, just recently, she did win an award by Macmillan Library here in Wisconsin Rapids.
That's right.
I want to talk a little bit about that just really quick as we wrap up the show here. What does it feel like to win? I mean, it's a local prize. You know, it's just from our local library here. But that's still got to be thrilling.
Oh, I was elevated when I got that email. I was in a coffee shop. And I got so excited. I was like, I have to tell somebody. So I got in line to tell the barista, but I was in that line for a little while, and the moment had passed. So I went back to my seat. But I was just so excited. And even though it is a smaller competition in like the grand scheme of things, it didn't in any ways lessen the just a terrific feeling and honor that I got from it. I'm still like so touched by it.
Well, I can tell you, you were not the only one feeling that excited.
Mm-hmm.
I saw it in my partner here.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
James, couldn't touch him those 2 days, man. No. He was over the moon.
Yeah.
Aww.
Very, very proud of you. Really proud, Ibrea. Really appreciate the time. Thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a really fun, great conversation. Mm-hmm. But the problem is you did a good job, so now you're going to have to come back sometime. Now you're going to have to come back.
Oh, darn.
Thank you, Bria. Really do appreciate the time. And want to remind everybody, whether it's Amazon, or you said Amazon and Barnes & Noble are places they can go to look for your work?
That's correct.
And your pen name, B.A. McRae?
Yep, B.A. McRae.
Yeah, especially if you're typing that into any search engine, really, you should be able to get right to the writing. And again, you get the Hi-Ho Pistachio podcast or any of her podcasts. Wherever you get your podcasts, you can find them, iTunes, Spotify, all the above, right?
That's correct. I would aim more towards Spotify, but yeah.
Okay, good to
Excellent.
Know.
Bria, thank you again for the time. We'll talk real soon. You take care, hon.
Thank you so much for having me on, guys. You're fun.
That is going to do it for another episode of Director's Cut. Seth, well done, my man.
Oh, well, you know, you provided the guest in a couple of ways. You provided the guest. So, yes.
You guys are right.
Yeah, that's right. So on that note, thanks, everyone, for listening to Director's Cut. We'll be back again next week. Everyone, have a great week. Bye-bye.